Charlottesville, and that has gone down until now. Just as population in the 60s started going up. So the obvious answer to ASAP's issue is to have scans of trains between let me ask, if I may, the first question, and I caution Meredith that we would ask this. Because our focus is population growth, some of us, tree huggers all, who believe that we should be getting out of our noxious gas-fueling vehicles and getting into public transportation, while we can't deny the desirability of that, many of us fear that it will exacerbate population growth if and increase the possibility of Charlottesville becoming a bedroom community for D.C. How do you respond to our fear?
Well, as I said when I began, I have no documentation that this will not create some more interest in Charlottesville from the outside world as a place to live. I also don't think that we have good evidence that it will create what some fear to be a bedroom community. And I think that the truth is probably somewhere in between absolutely no additional stimulation to growth and creating a bedroom community. And the truth is, it's undoubtedly as it usually is, somewhere in the middle. For me, this is a matter of choices. And I've been in public service for quite a while. I've heard a lot from the public over the years about the need for and the desirability of better rail connections for Charlottesville, not just to D.C., but to lots of other places. But D.C. is most often mentioned. We have no choice right now, or almost no choice, but to travel by car, to get on 29 and 66 and travel by car. It's a 2.5 to 3.5 hour ride, depending on the time of day. The projected time, we're not talking about high-speed rail service here. The track system in Virginia does not support high-speed rail service, and it's not going to without the kind of investments that we're not going to see anytime in the foreseeable future. That's because we're not there yet as a state. So we're not talking about a service that's really that time competitive with driving. What it offers is the convenience. It offers the comfort. For a lot of people like senior citizens who don't drive any longer, are really shy away from driving on the highways, particularly 66, and I'm one. I hate driving on 66 in particular. Get me into that Washington corner and I just tighten up. And I get all nervous and crazy and I make bad mistakes and I get off on places I'm not supposed to be off on just because somebody forced me out of my lane. And there are a lot of people who no longer will tolerate that. And so it limits their mobility. A lot of seniors will stay home. They just have limited choices if they don't use public transportation generally. We have a lot of students, thousands, who come here from Northern Virginia. And they come in the first year without cars. And so if they want to go home for the weekend, they need a bum ride with a friend. And the parents come down and make a round trip to take them on Friday and then a round trip to bring them back on Sunday. Again, more use of the roads. And what I see this service performing is a lot of relief of traffic on 29 and 66, an alternative to driving, a congestion reliever, and a choice, giving people a transportation choice. And it is all about choices and alternatives. There are lots of reasons, I think, many sectors of the community who would be very interested in this. And I think the attendance here tonight and the interest in this is an example.
Kind of interest we have. Good, thank you. I'm going to call on people. I would like you to identify yourself, if you will. Corinne had her hand up first. Corinne, tell us who you are.
I'm Corinne Bowitt. I've written on trains in Europe and in Japan. Their trains are infinitely better than ours. How come?
Well, I mean, how come ours is so loud?
Well, I think some of it has to do with the way our land use has developed and the way our cities have sprawled out into suburbs. And our interstate highway system has fed that kind of development pattern for 50 years now. And it's not, it's that kind of development pattern is compatible almost exclusively with getting in your car and driving wherever you need to drive. Whereas in Europe, I think for the most part, there are plenty of suburbs in Europe too, but I think their city centers and urban density in their city centers is still a fact of life. And it's workable to connect city centers in Europe. And they haven't neglected the rail infrastructure the way we have here. We've had 50 years of car culture. We've all but abandoned our rail services in America. And we have 50% fewer miles of usable rail now than we had 30 years ago. So, you know, the highway use has gone up, our cities are sprawled in all directions, and we have fewer track miles to serve them. So it's been a whole different pattern of psychology and pattern of development.
Okay, Gary, the one question you had to ask, or maybe you did, I'm sorry, I had an impact over there. Tell us who you are, please.
Gary Dyle. The train is actually not going to be the driver for bringing people here. This area has been advertised to retirees and high livers for about 10 or 15 years. There's even a website brought to you by our local real estate industry called movetoseville.com. Yes. Just go to www.movetoseville.com, or I think the local real estate association has it as a link on their site.
So let me tell you what BRE would be interested in doing if they make the decision to come to Charlottesville to expand service to Charlottesville. They would drop one or two trains a day from Manassas. They serve Manassas on a regular basis with numerous trips between Union Station and Manassas that go through Alexandria. And they would drop, they're proposing probably two trains daily from Manassas. Whether this is commuter hours or leisure travel hours, that is absolutely not given yet. I think they would want to know where the market is. They're also very concerned that they not disrupt the effectiveness of their own commuter service in their own service area right now. So that may mean that when it's off hours, not peak hours, that's when they would send their operators and their equipment down to Charlottesville to pick up riders there and make a round trip. They're actually not proposing at this point, or not talking about weekend service. Weekend service would be more at expense because they don't, as a commuter service, they don't operate on the weekend. But they are willing to work with our market and see where the demand is and where the need is, and then adapt to that. The cost of the service will be affected by what they come up with. But the market is not going to be there for more than two daily trains. And the timing of those trains is totally up in the air.
Yes, tell us who you are.
My name is Pam Friedman, and we go back and forth to Washington on a pretty regular basis. My husband works up there part of the time. Two observations. One is just a perfect example. We were in Washington over the weekend, and I took the train back on Sunday night when there was a snowstorm in New York, and consequently what happened was the train that should have gotten me to Charlottesville at 9:30 at night got me to Charlottesville at 4:30 the next morning. Mm-hmm. And what had happened, because it's a long-distance train, it wasn't just that it was held up in New York. Because of the laws regarding how long a crew can be on the train was moving along very nicely, got to Wilmington, Delaware, and stopped for 4 hours to wait for a new crew. That wouldn't happen with the VRE. And there were probably 15 people that got off in Charlottesville. Almost all of them, at least age-wise, looked like students or young professionals. I think I was maybe the oldest person on there. And it was, you know, it's a great way to travel on Amtrak if it works, but quite often it doesn't. And we end up driving back and forth. My other observation, though, would be that it seems to me that the whole dynamic of the bedroom community is that people go out farther in order to find affordable housing. And if you think about Charlottesville and affordable housing, it ain't there. So it's, you know, the dynamic that could cause sprawl in other places, I think, is not such an issue here. I think we have a very sophisticated community that would use the train to use the city and to use that as a launching off point for other places.
Good. Thank you. You want to answer or should we go on to it?
Oh, go on. I think I have nothing to add to that.
Question there, and then the far corner, and then back, and then here.
My name is Warren Groupie. I'm the medical director of the International Center for the Health Sciences. So I'm one of those people that are absolutely required to go to Washington. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. That's not where my comment is, though. It's an issue of this whole business of does a train attract growth, which is being a reasonable concern, I guess. A vignette. Marietta in Georgia, on the outskirts of Atlanta, declined MARTA about 20 years ago. They absolutely refused to let MARTA out there, and it was for this very same reason. They did not want to stimulate growth. Over the years, the growth has not only taken over Marietta, it's moved on to Ackworth. And what they have in return for it is absolutely phenomenal congestion that's beginning to affect all sorts of business, real estate values, all sorts of things. So it's extremely difficult. I guess my question would be, what are the downsides of not doing this? Is there a downside to not doing it? And my concern would be congestion. Thank you.
Jack asked if I brought these fingers here. Thank you so much. I've not met this gentleman before, although I know he's on our website list.
And then you and then you have time.
See, I'm Kirk Bowers. I'm a civil engineer. I work in Stafford County, which is the second fastest growing county in the state. I work for a civil engineering firm that does all the stormwater management and erosion sediment control reviews for the Stafford County agencies. What I've observed is there, and people are moving to that county in Fredericksburg, get away from D.C. because of the high cost of the housing market up in that area in Northern Virginia. But the people came first. And then they brought VRE in to help alleviate congestion and transportation on 95, which is a nightmare. My next question is, when can we get VRE in Charlottesville?
I think it would be very helpful to you. It's really Kirk raised his family here in Charlottesville.
I've lived here 20 years almost.
And Pam has been here. She was raised here. She's in Charlottesville, right?
Since 16.
Okay, so these are people who, and I think it's true of many people who have employment opportunities outside the area, you know, who live here all their lives. But the opportunities come from outside the area, and so the travel is a necessary part of their lives. And this is what I'm talking about alternatives and giving a choice to people who need it.
There's a question way back there. Yes, tell us who you are.
My name is Christopher Payne. I commute about four times a month to D.C. I work for the Natural Resources Defense Council there. And I'm wondering if you've talked to other communities that, especially in dealing with the Virginia legislature, team up with them. I mean, the Shenandoah Valley needs, Harrisonburg needs community service, Front Royal, Stanton. I mean, there could be a VRE loop that basically takes in the Shenandoah Valley and then also provides better service going west from Charlottesville. The second question I have is, have you looked at the possibility of boosting ridership on this by scheduling the trains in such a way that people could commute to Charlottesville on it from the 29th North Corridor?
Right.
So you'd get commuter traffic in both directions. And the third thing would be adding stations. I see you just have Orange and Culpeper on the list, but obviously you know, of Forest Lakes and their population, very dense centers that are cropping up on 29 North.
Well, I think the latter suggestion, just to address that, is one of the things that people are concerned about. If we have platforms, for example, that move further and further and further out, are we putting a spur to some of the growth that's out there? On the other hand, bringing people in from 29 North who live in Forest Lakes all the way into Union Station creates congestion on 29, you know, and if people live there and use the train several times a week, several times a month, that increases trips into the heart of the city. There's no question about that. So I don't have a good answer for you there, but the National Ground Intelligence Center claims that they can bring 800 people regularly every week to Charlottesville from D.C. and back again, as I understand their numbers. And so, you know, we have a lot of people going back and forth all the time. And it would probably make practical sense to have a platform somewhere out north to catch those travelers. As far as loops to other places, I did talk to the Stanton Chamber of Commerce a couple of years ago about the Transdominion Express. This was when this was before the demonstration project that cut us off from service. And they are mildly interested in service to Charlottesville, some kind of regular service to Charlottesville. And I've had people from Lexington and Rockridge County and, you know, points west say, we'd like to have some connection. But they've also said, I'll drive to Charlottesville and take the train from there. So I think that there's lots of potential here for making, you know, some kind of loop. And someone the other day even mentioned Crozet, which, of course, is a designated growth area. These are all very good questions. As far as the timing of the service goes, one of the reasons we need to survey the community for the need and when they would, you know, when are preferred times, travel times on this service, how often would it be used, and then presumably the service would be tailored around that.
Yes, this question right here. Councilor
Touchdown Patton, and I am a true delivery type of shoe hunter. I am the advocacy chair for Atlanta Conservation Society. And obviously, this is not a water issue, so I can't speak on behalf of my organization, but the grassroots effort. My concern with this is precisely what you said about bringing those tourists down from D.C. into Charlottesville, where they spend a night at bed and breakfast and leave the next day. Now, everybody here is talking about population growth. One of the things that we've seen with sprawl development is they always develop commercial first. And that's the justification for putting in new subdivisions. That particular statement, and as you said, you cannot predict the impact, but that particular statement that you made, put up the red flags in my mind as far as giving sprawl development further impetus.
But yeah, I'm not with
that. Out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I can address that because I don't know about tourism and sprawl development. In my mind, those connections don't click. That doesn't work for me. It could be that there's something I don't understand about it.
It's about developing commercial retail centers. For example, I think one of the proposals maybe it's the North Point development wants to put in a nice big expensive shopping center with like Nordstrom's and stuff like that. That may not have to go up to D.C. to buy or go up to Richmond to buy. They're using that as a commercial center for a housing development, which doesn't have people. It's not, the housing development around does not need it. So it's that kind of thinking that I'm just kind of warning against, that by attracting people down here for the commercial retail type of stuff may also end up developing this sprawl type of situation we've seen. But, I think the North Point is mixed use. It's not a media welcome project, but it's a mixed use project.
But it's also not a tourist magnet.
I don't.
Why would you come here to Nordstrom's when you can stay in Lockington?
Yeah. But if you're in Culpeper,
you still go to Washington.
Now you do. Had that easy grant. But that's not tourism. But we're not talking tourism there. We're talking people coming in the shop from other parts of the region. I think tourism is very different.
Okay, there's a question in the back, and then Janice, and then you, and then you.
Tell us who you are.
Yes, hi, my name is Tom Hurst, and I wanted to ask you, Meredith, regarding the funding, from what we know of other communities that are served by the DRE, what would be the likely proportion between local and state funding? And as much as you know local budgets as well as you do, how onerous would the contributions from our local governments be to the funding?
That's a question that I think remains to be answered. We have not reached anywhere near that point in our discussions with DRE. I can tell you this. VRE has it's structured so that it serves now only member jurisdictions. The jurisdictions that are part of its service area join VRE. And when they do that, they have to pay part of the expense as local governments for the project, for the service. That said, when they seek to expand their service, the DRE is not aggressively expanding, but they are talking now with Fauquier County. Did I say that right?
Yes.
I never know. I never know if I said that right. They're talking now with Fauquier Board of Supervisors about being the next jurisdiction to join. And you can only join if you are contiguous with the member jurisdictions. And so, Fauquier County is contiguous. Then it's potentially possible that Culpeper County could follow, and Orange County could follow, and Albemarle County could follow. Or not. I understand VRE's interest in, at this point, is some kind of contractual service with city and county here. That's not a membership arrangement. And beyond that, I don't know what kind of local dollars we might be talking about, if any. What I've heard them say is that they would go to the state and federal resources for funding. And I do think the State Department of Rand Public Transportation is very interested in this service to Charlottesville, as is our current representative on the Commonwealth Transportation Board, which David is from Culpeper. And he's really mildly interested in this. So I think the prospect of some state funding isn't unrealistic for the future. We certainly shouldn't go to the General Assembly this year to be funded, because we're not that well developed. This is really at the conceptual stage. Thank you. I hope that helps.
Janice, the beard here, and then you. I would say that. Janice, tell us who you are.
I'm Janice Jaquet. And all I can think is, if we build it, they will come. And I think if we build this, we're encouraging people to live far from where they work, which is environmentally unsound. And I think if you must commute to Washington, it might be a good idea to think of living close to Washington.
It would be nice if they would create some good jobs here. That's another problem. We don't have enough good jobs.
Well, then one might have to move to where the dogs are. Just say, I don't think it's a good idea to encourage people to live far.
It's much more environmentally friendly to use a train, because
it's more environmentally friendly to live close to where you work, so you don't have to do that.
Actually, I'm the expert in that field.
So walk
you want to extend this discussion?
I'll enter with maybe one thought. I think if there's any single technological
what shall I say, technological element that has encouraged growth in our area. It's been the internet. People telecommute. I know dozens of people who live in Charlottesville and do the bulk of their professional service or their business online locally. And I would like to say that this has probably been, to my estimation, a very big growth driver in our area. I do not propose shutting down the internet, however. And I think the presence of air service and the expansion of our airport is also a growth driver, because some people move here and they use the airlines to get to their business connections when they need to. And I don't propose closing down the airport. I think people need choices. I think we need to get control of our growth through good public policy. And I don't think it's right to say your choices should be limited because, well, we don't want you here if you need to commute.
Let me just agree with that. It makes sense, and I think we have found common ground here, that what we're talking about is what we may be talking about, and this does not represent ASAP policy, because we don't have one regarding this really, is what we're talking about, the development potential. And the question is there an infinite potential for growth here in the county that would be filled, would be blown up by new transportation links? And the answer is, right now, almost. We don't have a cap that's effective. Look at what's happening in Crozet. Is it 12 or 24 or 35,000 people? And we may need to start thinking about what we want for our community in terms of population. And then, once we've made some decisions about the development potential, then I don't think new rail would be a threat at all to those of us who are concerned about growth. Yes, sir. Tell us who you are.
Yeah, I'm Z Cantonac citizen. And I've been a train enthusiast ever since I saw the last passenger train pulled by a steam locomotive pull out of Hartford, Connecticut in January 1954. But your program here has highlighted the paucity of rail, passenger transportation on rail, and the relative little amount of revenue. I'm wondering about the potential relationship of having the enormously profitable freight business. I happen to live no more than 200 feet from a rail line in Fauburg right now, and I have witnessed in the past half a dozen years enormous increase in the tonnage of freight coming by that rail. And I want to know if anyone in our Virginia government is doing good independent auditing of the income of these privately held rail lines and companies, and is getting the fair share of taxes from those companies.
That's a good question. I think that most of the taxes come from property taxes on the right of way that the railroads own. I'm not sure what other taxes they're paying. Most of the freight that is carried in Virginia is through freight. Lion's share of it is through freight. There isn't much that originates in Virginia and terminates in Virginia. Yet, so far as I'm aware, there are no taxes that are paid for through freight service. So my information, the best that I have, is that no, we're probably not auditing the profits of the railroads, and no, we're not receiving much benefit from their, from their service in the state. That said, it is a little troubling to me that we propose spending public funds to support upgrades on the rail lines when they are privately owned. And particularly when the freight railroads are not very interested in supporting passenger service.
Exactly. There's a huge profitability difference there.
They regard passenger service as a nuisance and a favor. that they do in the public interest. And so it is the last thing that they think about. On the other hand, every time we make a public investment in rail improvements for the freight railroads, we also make that investment in rail improvements for passenger rail. And so the two sometimes go hand in hand. There's and the Department of Rail and Public Transportation and the State Rail Plan, where they assess future needs in terms of financial investments for rail to have a good network in the state, has three categories of funding. One is that that benefits freight only, one that benefits largely passenger, and the big pot, the big category is that benefits both because they travel on the same tracks. I don't know where I'm going with this, except that I think you're at it's absolutely a valid point you make, and that's I think the reason the Senate Stark Commission said we need to review our relationship to the freight railroads and seriously consider if we have a role as a state in the public interest in ownership of the infrastructure. And some states are going that direction. So.
Thank you. We have a question here, and then we'll go back there.
Yeah, my name is Joe Polshedlin. I live in Aspen and work as a mechanical engineer here in town. And I guess kind of a follow-up question is I just think about it from the economic point of view, roads versus railroads, you know, which is better. I've been in a lot of different countries with a lot of different growth rates, negative, like Finland and Estonia, to positive growth rates, countries like Germany. There's a fair amount of sprawl in Germany. And the railroads seem to be a constant, regardless of maybe more positive growth rate, and they seem to be a positive alternative to roads. They have their railroad maps look like ours from 1910. Currently, it's just trains that go everywhere. But the property I live on is bounded by a train track, and I like the sound of the trains going there. But I hear lots of freight trains going. There's only one train going out to Stanton every 2 days for passengers. And it kind of sounds like that the commercial freight companies that own the tracks have a favorable situation created in the days of the robber barons that gives them a good power position with respect to other transportation. And so given that situation, could it be more profitable for them to carry passenger trains on those tracks versus freight? And if not, is some of that because of perhaps an unjust situation as far as them getting the benefit that the rest of the subsidize?
That had a lot of questions in it. I think.
Just thinking more like the economic viability and how various is that.
You know, I think the problem is that today's freight railroads don't know what the economic viability of passenger rails would be. I do think one of the reasons I started my presentation was the successful intercity systems that are fairly new is because each of them has had enormous growth in revenues. In a short time, enormous growth in passengers and enormous growth in revenues. And they've added more and more trains to serve the demand. So I think the demand is there, and I think the profitability potentially is there. But I also think that a common error that's made is to assume that railroads of all the modalities, for some reason, have to be, quote, profitable in order for us to operate. And you hear this all the time. Why are we subsidizing them? If they can't be self-supporting, if they can't be self-sustaining, then we shouldn't be supporting them. And if the private sector can't make a profit with them, then we shouldn't have them. I hear this a lot. And it's a common thing that's said in our culture. And yet, clearly, we support every other modality. In this country rather substantially, and we don't expect them to make a profit. It's only the railroads, and somehow we expect passenger service to make a profit. We thought we were making some progress, particularly with Norfolk Southern, who became interested in passenger service when they bought out Conrail in New England, and immediately found themselves as a result operating a passenger service, an intercity passenger rail service, and kind of liked it, and kind of thought it might work for them, and kind of thought it might be profitable. And then they bought a commuter rail line in Atlanta, and they operate that, and they're making profit with that. And so they were beginning to show a turnaround in their attitude, Norfolk Southern, in their attitude about passenger rail, and starting to cooperate with projects, the potential for projects like the Transcontinental Express. When the TDX was actually funded last year in the General Assembly, part of the reason it was funded and considered viable was because Norfolk Southern had agreed to operate the train. And that was a big breakthrough. That's a major breakthrough. However, I personally think that the future, if we're going to have a future for passenger rail, we need to do what North Carolina's doing, Florida's doing, and Illinois, and New York, and that is we need to invest in state-owned and operated railroads.
In New Jersey, New York, thank you.
I know.
Tell us who you are, please.
My name is Virginia Jarino, and I have it's not a bad question, at least it's a pretty tangential one. In the presence of all these experts, I can't resist asking a question about something that's puzzled and saddened me for years. About 10 years ago, Greyhound ran 3 buses a day from Charlottesville downtown directly to the door of Dulles Airport, right to the place you go in the building. Now they're down to 1. I have a very big family, and I had a lot of students at that time. With all the propaganda I could generate, I couldn't make enough traffic from those 3 buses a day to get them to keep those. Now there's only 1 a day at the most miserably unproductive times. Does anybody know what happened or why or how such a debacle could be averted?
I don't have a response to that. I do know that take the same schedules and the same routes and put a bus on the route, put a train on the route, people ride the train if they want that bus. I know that. I know that's pretty well documented.
It's incredibly cheap.
Yeah. All other things being equal, when they are, obviously. But Virginia, I don't have an answer. If anybody has...
Questions on trains? Yes. Harry, tell us who
you are. I'm Harry Landers, and given that ASAP's biggest concern is with growth, and given that, I guess at best, we don't really know whether VRM service would or wouldn't contribute to growth here, why it makes sense to do some kind of a study to find out what's happening. For example, Fredericksburg, I think, has had VRM since 1993. Maybe growth in Fredericksburg could be compared to growth in some other place equidistant from D.C. that doesn't have train service, maybe Culpeper. Or maybe there are patterns to look at in California or the Pacific Northwest where you show some of the train lines that come. But it seems to me that kind of hard information would help folks from ASAP to decide whether this is something that we maybe like to support, but we're very fearful of. And until there were growth caps that Jack referred to earlier that are in effect, we're very nervous about this. So studies or information would be helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know of any such studies that have been done anywhere. It's quite possible that they have been.
Culpeper is now growing exponentially. Land developers have come into that area and are building huge subdivisions out there. The major reason is because the cost of land and housing is so much cheaper, and yet it's really easy to commute to D.C. and Northern Virginia.
And it's in the absence of a train.
Yeah.
It's in the absence of train service. Right.
I think, holding all other things equal would be very important to do, but I acknowledge that I think that would be, I can't tell you how many times on city council I said, ooh, I don't want to do anything until we have a study. You know, and I acknowledge that and I respect that. That said, I'm not sure how it would be executed. But I do think, Harry, that we have benefits to the community that we need to consider here also. I mean, I think there is a balance here. And one of the things that I'm interested in is a new service for the community that I think there is a need for and a demand for. And that would greatly contribute to the quality of life for the people who are here now. There's a real question about whether when you add new services that improve the quality of life, are you somehow then degrading the future quality of life by attracting new residents? But I think that's true of almost any kind of service that you might be talking about. And I hate to think making something that's as environmentally friendly as rail, and it gives people a really good alternative for travel as rail, I hate to make that the whipping boy. So I think that the point's well taken. I'd like to see that happen. I'm not sure. I can wait for that. But if you've got a suggestion for, you know, somebody to do the study or
it is a hard study, as you know. Don't let all the variables constant. We've got time for about three more questions. John, Peter, and Al, and I think we're going to have to wrap it up then. Do you have a question? Did you already have that? Yes, you.
Me?
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to hitchhike on...
Tell us who you are.
I'm Glenn Short, member of ASAP. I wanted to hitchhike on what the lady said about trying to get to Dulles. I'm going to Europe tomorrow. I called United Airlines. They said $488 round trip from Charlottesville to Dulles. Then I called Van on the Go, $344 from Charlottesville to Dulles. Then I called Amtrak. They said, if you've got to be there at a specific time, don't come to us. I went over to buy a ticket. There were dozens of people sitting around. I said, what are you waiting for? 10:30 in the morning. The 7 a.m. train.
Yeah.
At the terminal, they said, you know, yesterday the train didn't come at all.
Yeah.
Don't come to us. We have no guarantees for you. So somebody's driving me.
Glenn, thanks for being here and have a wonderful trip. She probably should have left already.
If you make it. Very controversial project, but we could presumably take the train, the VRE train, to Alexandria and connect with Metro from Alexandria and take the Metro to Dulles when that connection happens.
I'm here, Lynn. I live in Charlottesville, and I think worrying about the growth potential or the population growth potential of trains is dwarfed by the growth potential of other modes of transportation. Think about the pressure from the city and the county for the Eastern Connector, which will provide opportunity for I don't know how many thousands of new residents to live here. The Medicaid Parkway is a project that will open up development for thousands of additional residences. The Northern Free State Road will open up for thousands of new residences. And so the population in the county is driven more by local decisions, and I can't imagine that any service of rail coming to Charlottesville will be noticeable in the development of extended populations compared to all these other decisions, which perhaps ASAP is concerned about, but maybe a balance of that concern would sort of push down concern of additional growth from rail. I think a multimodal rail connection where we have few stops but linking to other more frequent transportation on the 29th corridor, be they bus rapid transit or trolleys or other services, other transit services, would, I think, allow people to change their lifestyles, and they would be not wanting to live in the suburbs. They want to be able to walk to the connection to the train or walk to the connection to the airport, or I walk virtually everywhere in downtown. I live right downtown. So I think that this might be a little bit out of proportion with the true risks of the road in the camp.
Amen.
And Peter, thank you, because I want to say something Al and I were talking about weeks ago, and that is that growth patterns, when new rail service is instituted in a community, the growth patterns tend to occur around the train stations. I mean, that's where the magnet for higher density growth takes place, because people want to be conveniently located at the train stations. if they're going to have a frequent commute, for example, to D.C., that's where I think really one of the things that I think would be beneficial to the city is that it will, I hope, help stimulate some very quality redevelopment and infill development on West Main Street, which I think is sorely needed. You can disagree with me, and I would agree if you disagree with me, but I know it's part of the city's strategic plan and comprehensive plan that the West Main Street redevelopment needs to occur.
Last question, Al.
Well, so, yeah. Echo Peter, I'm a vice president of ASAP, so I'm a bit concerned, and it might appear to some people in this room, that ASAP's growth management policy is to strangle the region in traffic and then see, we told you. That's probably not a good strategy for us to adopt. I think we ought to be forward-thinking and realize that we have to do things to limit growth, but that doesn't mean we need to pound people over the head with the cost of growth. And we ought to take steps forward to, as Meredith says, give choices. And we're faced right now with the last presentation that people came here and talked about the Ruckersville Parkway. And yet not a single person that night asked a question about rail alternatives. And we could have a rail coming down, as Meredith described, tomorrow, which could put off a lot of the Ruckersville Parkway pressure, in my mind. And that would be a much more effective study. Let's see whether we can get some cars off the road with something that can be in operation tomorrow. So there's a lot of positive in this, and there's always some potential downsides. But as someone else said, growth is happening. I'm not buying into the growth thing, but I think right now, given all the promotion about the only thing that would slow growth would be an endemic case. Avian flu becoming endemic in this area, and then people might not.
Thank you.
The Metropolitan Planning Organization has done a light rail corridor study from Stannardsville and Ruckersville to Charlottesville.
Yeah, sure.
It's on their website.
Well, let's don't forget about global warming, too. I have heard a hair-raising interview on NASA Public Radio last week with the head NASA climatologist, who painted a very frightening scenario about global warming and how in another decade we're not going to be able to get control of it. It will become out of our control in 10 years if we don't significantly reduce the emission of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And one of the things I brought and didn't talk about and won't is an EPA report that's online. You can go on the Environmental Protection Agency. There's a report on environmental impacts of transportation that compares different modalities. And just look at the comparison between cars and trucks and trains, and then tell me that we don't need to redevelop, if you will, a historic relationship with passenger rail in this country. I think we definitely do. Thank you.
Our next speaker. ASAP's next meeting is March 6th.